Water Banter.
Boom, and we are live with another episode of the Brown Water Banter podcast. My name is Jared Seymour.
My name is Joey Cates.
It is, and we got a good show for you, man. We're ready to jump into it on this one here. We've got Trevor from the DMR. He's right here with us in the studio. We're going to be talking about the recreational offshore landing permit. Mm-hmm. Nailed it.
That's a long.
I nailed it.
That's a lot.
The ROLF. That's easier to do. LP. ROLP. There you go. No, it's going to be a good episode. We're going to hopefully be answering all of your questions. I know there's a lot of people out there who's got opinions one way or the other, and we're going to hopefully get out all the good information so that you know, you can understand the who, what, when, why behind this whole other thing that we have to do now to recreational fish. But before we do that, we're going to jump into the people that that keep the lights on for us over here at the Brown Water Banter Studio. We're going to give them a big thank you. Let me click one button right there. Nailed it. All right, we got right out of the gate. Dr. Robbie Williams over at Southern Magnolia Smiles, man. 2024 is the year to smile more. You can look them up on socials at Southern Magnolia Smiles on Facebook and Instagram. Dr. Robbie Williams right here and his team that he has put together. They are located on Washington Avenue in Ocean Springs. So when you're ready to book that appointment, you can give him a shout at 228-215-1202 and tell him Brownwater sent you. Let me pull this down real quick.
You get a free toothbrush.
Yeah, you'll get a free toothbrush, and everybody loves free toothbrushes. So, right here, our buddy Tyler over at Taylor & Cox Law Firm. If you find yourself in need for legal representation, they specialize in felonies, misdemeanors, DUIs, family law, divorce, child custody, you name it, they can take care of it for you. They've been practicing law on the Mississippi Gulf Coast for over 30 years. They come highly recommended in their field. Nobody wants to need an attorney, but when you do, you want someone that can fight for you tooth and nail, like I always say. And Taylor & Cox Law Firm, that's the people. So give them a shout, 228-696-0111, and tell them that Brownwater sent you. Rocky Brooks over at Sea to Swamp. You can look them up on Facebook as well. Sea, the number two, and then Swamp. They've got all your tackle and apparel needs covered. He's got two locations now, Goshen and Gulfport. You can give him a call at 228-205-3964. And I got some updated pictures here. This is the Gulfport store where he's slinging the kayaks out of it. You can see the walls are full of stuff right now. Also, look at the poles, man. All that right there. I got some more photos I'll upload for the next episode. But he's got it. Go check him out. Gulfport location, Sea to Swamp. We appreciate him supporting the show. Our buddy Kendrick over at Forever Young Men and Women's Health. If you want to get back in the gym, you're tired of feeling like a big turd sitting on the couch, put your health care in the hands of a professional. Let Kendrick do some blood work on you. See if you need hormone replacement. See if you're vitamin deficient. Maybe you need testosterone. He specializes in testosterone replacement for both men and women. Yeah, that's right. You can go back in a few episodes and check out the talk that we did with him right here in the Brownwater studio. Go look that up. But when you're ready to book that consultation, you can give him a shout at 228-363-6623. Tell him Brownwater sent you. And bringing up the rear here with an updated photo as well, Dewey Dewbugs. That was where we went live last episode on location in D'Iberville, right across the street from the Scarlet Pearl. They are specializing, and I underline, capitalize, specializing in boiled seafood. We had the Maverick platter, and it was legit, man.
We had two.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell them that, but we did have two. Royal Reds, snow crab, lobster tail. What else? Potatoes,
yeah, everything corn, you can think of.
I hope I'm not leaving anything out, but man, it was delicious. So if you haven't been down there in D'Iberville, go check them out. This photo right here, well, double click that photo right there. He's also got a seafood market that he hadn't even really completely rolled all the way out yet, but that area, that's where the 2024 Bay Rat Bash is going to be, and that's coming up April 13th. That's a Saturday. Hardhead Catfish Tournament. I'll go ahead and throw that up right there. We got all of our sponsors here, man. Coastal Realty Group, Captain's Wharf, the Mississippi Gulf Coast Billfish Classic, the Bayou, the Deepwater Mafia, Ocean Springs Marine Mark, Coastal Marine Sales and Service.
Which is also our app sponsor.
Correct. Advanced Commercial Services, which is if you need anything built outside, any type of commercial work done, residential as well, at your home, give them a shout. You can look them up on Facebook. Freeze Frame Daiquiri and our good friends over at Nelson Outdoors, who always support us, and we appreciate them as well. So tickets are on sale right now at the Brownwater Banter. brownwaterbanter.com, and you can register right now, $25, and you can turn a hardhead into a grand. So that was a mouthful.
It was a mouthful. Trevor, you still awake over there, man?
I'm there.
Sorry, bud. That was the intro reel. But now that we got everybody's attention, Let's jump into it. So cruising through, I guess it was Facebook, Joey. I don't know if you remember. And all of a sudden I see this thing pop up.
Yes.
It might have even been the DMR's Facebook page. Don't remember. Click on it, read about it. And I'm like, oh, what is this? Another permit that we have to have for every fish that everybody loves. And we talked about this a little bit before we went live.
Yeah.
Initial gut reaction before I read anything was, damn, another hoop to jump through. Why are we doing this? However, yeah. I continued to read, and I was a little less disappointed, actually kind of looking that this might be something great,
right?
Potentially. So we're going to dig into it right now. But if you could, Trevor, introduce yourself, what you do at the DMR and how you got there.
So
please.
My name is Trevor Moncrief. I'm the FinFish Bureau Director at the Department of Marine Resources. We're a small group, so my day-to-day operations are overseeing projects that deal with management-based research, regulatory side of things, which obviously, you know, a fair amount of folks are familiar with.
Right.
Grants, reports, sitting on a computer, attending committee meetings, you know, across the board. Each day's a different adventure. Kind of what got me here, as a kid, I grew up like Southwest Georgia,
right.
Farm country, really. And I spent every day bass fishing, farm ponds. That's what I did day in, day out. I've got reports from when I was in high school. My goal was to be a professional fisherman. That's what I was going to be. Parents said, nope, not happening.
No, probably not.
Yeah. You're going to go get a degree and all that. So I made my way up to the University of Georgia. You know, my brother-in-law did wildlife biology and forestry. I learned about, you know, fisheries biology, fisheries management through that. Decided that's kind of what I wanted to do. So went up to Georgia, Warnell College, the School of Forestry and Natural Resources. Did a lot of fisheries management focused stuff, wildlife management, all that. Then ended up coming down here for grad school, did more coastal science, and then ended up getting a job over at DMR, and I've been there.
Where'd you do grad school at?
USM.
Okay,
yeah,
so
yep.
I figured.
Yep. And so along the way, met my wonderful wife. I've got two little girls now, 1 and 3. So while I used to be an avid fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we understand.
I do not fish as much as I used to.
We are honest.
Neither do we.
We're
we talk about
everybody
it. We talk
on this
about
show.
It all the time.
Yeah. Like, I don't see y'all out there a whole lot.
Yeah.
You're right.
You're right.
You don't. But
we got
do,
kids.
We love it.
Yeah. So you are human. You are a human, right?
I am human.
So before we open the wasp nest, he's got kids. Let's
yeah.
leave him alone.
We'll keep
so,
it all.
Yeah, let's go back with Jared started. I guess in February this came out. Is that correct?
Yeah.
February. And then it started getting passed through Facebook and stuff like that. The initial reaction, the forums I saw were a lot of Louisiana guys jumping in saying, we've already got it. It's not going to be that bad. A lot of Mississippi guys, some of the Mississippi guys or girls were saying it could help. Then you got the middle ground where it's, I don't really know what's going on and I don't know if I have to have this or not. And then you got the bottom ground who's saying, oh, it's just a money pool. It's just another hoop we got to jump through. It's a piece of paper I got to fill out, blah, 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 blah. Can you dissect a little bit of that for us?
I can. So trying to think back, it's probably best to try to go back about 5 or 6 years. Inception of Tails and Scales, running through the EFP years of Red Snapper, into state management, everything else like that, kind of what's happened to us for the last little while. There's been this dichotomy in the approach to be able to get fishery dependent data from the recreational sector, which is essentially landings, right?
Right.
Landings, links, everything else associated with it. For years, since 1981, it was done through the Marine Recreational Information Program. As Red Snapper began to have its troubles, especially in the more recent years where the season dropped more and more, there was this approach by the states to go down different directions as far as coming up with harvest estimates. Now, some of them went to more specialized general surveys, right? Mm-hmm. That's like what LA Creel is operating with now.
Yeah.
And others, like us in Alabama, went to more direct approaches. Tails and Scales is basically the evolution of that.
When did Tails and Scales come on board?
16. Okay. Yeah, and then mandatory new. 17, yep. And really took off 17, 18, 19 into what it is today. So with those specialized surveys designed, you know, we checked off one of the boxes, which was in-season harvest, being able to monitor red snapper real time. That was a big,
right.
Big thing that came through. Now, over time, kind of what we learned and what came down the pipe was this difference between the surveys that were being used, right? So obviously, we were doing a survey, consistent numbers across the board, but when we compared it to the other surveys that were being done, wildly different.
What are those surveys?
That's the MRIP survey, the Marine Recreational Information Program. And I'll say, I know this is a long backstory to get to.
No. This is the part that's going to clear it up for people.
So, really the last 6 years, majority of our time, not majority, but a large proportion of our time in our group has been focused on this difference between surveys and truly where in the process do things go wrong, right? Why are we seeing these kind of things happen? So I'll take you through a few instances, right? 2017, all this data is split up into waves, 1 through 6. They're 2-month periods. 2017, January and February, we had an harvest estimate for red snapper that came back at 400,000 pounds, a little over. That's a lot.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
I mean, our current one is,
yeah, way
it was 150,
that.
Now
yeah.
It's 60, came in at 400,000 pounds. So we started digging a little bit, try to see where it came from. Ended up being that one boat was surveyed out of Long Beach Harbor. 3 folks on it. The corresponding estimate that came out of it was 400,000 pounds. Now, as we had Tails and Scales come online, we started to see more of these instances and more times where things didn't line up. And we basically came down to where it was a layer of 4 things happening on the federal survey that really made the difference. The first one, and the most important one to note, is effort. Effort is the scaler for all the fishery dependent metrics that come out when it comes to catch, harvest, right? The amount of people taking trips,
right.
The amount of trips taken across the board. So the effort estimate that was being produced was gigantic. But at the same time, you have effort being produced and you have catch, right? And okay. Each one of those intermingle. So
I'm laughing because I put out a lot of effort. But I don't always catch, right?
A lot of people, that's part of the game.
That's why I call it fishing.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, the basic premise is effort times catch equals your overall harvest. So what we saw, because we conduct the dockside surveys, so you might have seen our folks at the ramp, all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
asking questions.
Pull up, hey, how many
we're right there.
Yeah.
So within that catch survey, right, we asked the question. Where did you spend majority of your time? Was it 3 miles and off? Was it inshore? Where was it at? All that kind of stuff. That aids in splitting the effort out, right? So if we have an effort estimate of 1,000 trips and we have 10 surveys and 2 of them are offshore, very rudimentary, but 20% of that effort goes to the offshore group. And whatever's caught in those trips is assigned as the overall, the CPUE, the catch for it.
So we're narrowing highways.
It's starting to feel like statistics class.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And it makes me uncomfortable.
So here's the premise of it. A lot of things were off in it.
Bad data essentially, is what we're talking about, right?
Yes. It's a federal program that's implemented across the board, across the United States, and it's meant for high throughput with states that have a lot of different surveys going on, right? And a surveyor in Florida might get 150 interviews at a given time. Because of how many folks are going out of there.
Correct.
Whereas we might get 10. And that approach doesn't operate as efficiently and as well with 10 as it does with 150.
Because there's a greater margin for errors. Yes.
Right.
So taking one guy or girl sitting at the dock is replaced by this Tails and Scales, and that's how the numbers and what you're talking about goes up.
Yeah.
The more data we have, the better it is.
Yeah, so basically what we went with was we'll just have a mandatory reporting program with Tails and Scales, but those differences still were there. And there's things that Tails and Scales misses within the overall federal management scheme of run assessments, like out-of-season discards and all the other species that are associated with the offshore fishery. So this is where – I know I glossed over a lot of but this is where we are in the scale, right? We've had differences in the surveys – And our focus as an agency is to find a solution to move forward that is best not only for our state, but all the species that are covered within our state, and also the overall federal region, or the overall Gulf of Mexico and
right.
the federal fisheries combined, right? So those are our list of priorities. And that's where this RLOP came from. And it's basically us moving away from MRIP, how things were traditionally done in our state, and moving in to LA krill, which we're calling MS krill.
Right. The same one that Louisiana has.
Same one that Louisiana has. It's been successful in their fishery.
How long have they been running theirs? Do you know?
I think it's been going on for over a decade at this point.
Really?
Close to
it's
a
that
decade.
Long. So it's nothing new.
Nothing new for them.
Okay.
What was the? What did you say it was? MS what?
MS krill.
Krill.
What is that? Explain that, because even I'm a little shaky on that.
So
krill limit?
Yeah. So basically, it's the survey design as a whole. LA krill. That's their survey that replaced MRIP. MS krill is essentially going to be what Louisiana's doing, but we're implementing it here. And the ROLP
yes.
is a part of that.
The MS krill, is that that's y'all's entity, the state, not the federal stuff?
Right.
Okay.
That is a state-run fishery-dependent survey that mimics LA krill.
What was the name of the federal program that you mentioned that had us at 400,000 at one point? What was that called?
That's MRIP, the Marine yeah. Recreational Information Program.
Okay, that's the federal guys.
That's the federal side
okay.
of it.
Okay.
So the RLP is basically an offshoot of us moving there. The Recreational Offshore Landing Permit, as implemented in Louisiana, identical here, is a way to be able to essentially isolate and limit your universe of anglers to the ones that specifically fish offshore and likely fish with more prevalence than those associated with the other fisheries, right? Because in the past, like I said, you would have this gigantic effort estimate, you would have these low numbers of surveys, you would have a large amount of effort moving into the offshore strata, which would then produce effort or catch estimates of red snapper and other federal species that were gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
This takes that huge license frame that's there and reduces it down to the individuals that are specifically fishing and targeting those offshore species that are listed for it. So when they take their trips, when they catch their fish, the effort that they undertake is constrained to their universe, essentially 5,000 to 10,000 rather than 80,000 anglers that are licensed currently in the state of Mississippi. And the premise of this as a whole.
So, I hate to cut you off, Jared, but like an inshore guy, the numbers would go off of him because he's licensed in the state of Mississippi, but he might not even bump offshore at all. He's got a 14-foot skiff. He fishes
right.
off a pier. So now, with this, you know the guys who are going offshore, correct?
Not,
is that what you're
yeah,
saying?
That's what we're saying. Yeah. So, and you got folks that fish the shore. You got folks that
right.
maybe fish one time that come down from the state that buy the annual license, right? Our total license universe is 80,000 plus anglers.
Mm-hmm.
And currently, the way it's set out, all those individuals are counted essentially across the board when these estimates come through. This constrains that universe.
So the person that was at the dock, just say, when they do a survey, that's what you call it,
mm-hmm.
they talk to an angler like Joey's saying, who's in a bay boat, that says, I didn't go out offshore, I stayed in the bay. Did they then, however you used to do it, did you mark it that way and that counted towards effort, which is the term you're using?
So
they couldn't designate that this person said that they did not go offshore, or they don't have any of these reef fish. There was no way to delineate that then in that
No, I mean,
model?
That question was asked, right?
Okay.
The area you fish.
Right. Right.
And if they said the state in the bay, that's fine. It would go toward the inshore area effort.
Okay.
But kind of the instance I was going toward, and that specifically, when it comes down to how that dockside survey informs effort.
Mm-hmm.
Generalization. If we have 10 surveys that occur in a given area
yep.
in the state, two of them go offshore fishing. 20% of that effort, or 20% of those, because 20% of the surveys are made up of offshore fishermen,
yes.
20% of the effort from that same time period will be allocated to the offshore fishery. Even though it's based on a small sample size and likely not representative of what's truly going on. Because
and now we're getting to the fine details, and I like that.
We're splitting hairs.
I got the 20%, 2 out of 10. That makes sense. Where does the effort come specifically? Can you say that again?
So the effort.
It ain't the 10 guys, right?
Yeah, so the effort.
Does that factor
MRIP,
in the 80,000?
Yes.
Okay.
So the effort side of MRIP comes through something that's called the FES, the Fishing Effort Survey. And y'all might have received one. Folks listening might have received one. It comes in the mail. Comes with, I think, $2 at this point, $1 or $2.
Okay.
It's a weather and outdoor activity survey, and at the back of it, they have questions about how many times you saltwater fish, did you saltwater fish in a vessel off the shore. That's how overall effort is gathered. And there's a lot of nuance to that one. I mean, matched, unmatched, licensed, trade, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's a statistically rigorous program across
the
board.
But it still requires it to go through the mail, that person to open it, mm-hmm. fill it out, and send it back.
Correct.
Right.
That sounds like
steps.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like mass surveys. That sounds like the way we used to do like Nielsen ratings on television, which I did receive in the mail one time. I thought that was the weirdest thing. You know, versus Facebook on this program right now. We know exactly how many people are going to watch it. We know exactly where they were. We know exactly how long they watched, when they turned it off, usually when Joey talks, you know, stuff like that.
And people not going in their mailbox and going,
correct. So this is an effort.
Bill. No.
Trash. Yeah.
This is an effort with y'all to get away from that. And it really does sound like statistics class. If you've ever been in any, you know, graduate level statistics, this is what all this is about.
Oh, yeah.
I wish they'd have had problems like this because I'd have paid attention more, right? Like trying to figure out effort and catch limits and stuff.
But, yeah, it's survey statistics, which,
correct.
You know,
yeah.
I'll go ahead and say it. We're not experts in that either. At our group, we try to do the best we can.
We probably farm it out, right?
We do our best to have folks, you know, basically be able to review and help us develop things and get it done.
Folks on the live, too, by the way, drop your questions. If we're not you're itching to know, hey, you haven't asked them this yet, let us know.
We're getting to the rest of it, though. So
we're nowhere there yet.
Yeah.
And I'll just throw one out here, and you know, not to interrupt the story, but Ronald Williams said, are we going to get 4 fish per person this year Louisiana? I'm assuming he means snapper. I'm assuming that's what he's talking about.
We got another show on snapper and all that stuff coming up.
So the short answer is no.
Yeah.
All right. So back to where we were in the story. So trying to get the old way of harvesting information and data to the new age now. Tails and Scales comes on in 2016, and I'm sure, if I remember correctly, too, probably met with a little bit of pushback from the community.
Yeah, because it was a beta for like a year.
Correct.
And then they actually put it into use in 17, like you said.
Now it's an app, you know, you download it on your phone. It's inside of the Brownwater Banter app. So shameless plug right there. So, but it's not that bad. It's not that bad to enter in your information. Yes, it's another step. But first question is, has that helped since 2016 to figure out snapper specifically? And then second question is, what's the difference between Tails and Scales and why we're doing this offshore landing permit?
Yeah, that's a great one. So, absolutely, Tails and Scales has been a benefit, right? It's allowed us to get a real-time view of our fishery, really understand what's going on, and maximize the fishing days that have been, you know, available to the recreational fishermen. And the comparisons between that and MRIP really laid the foundation for our understanding of
how off they were,
the flaws are.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can call it off.
I'm sorry.
Call it wrong. Whatever you want to call it. Right?
Discrepancy. Yes.
It's an absolutely statistically rigorous program reviewed by folks at the highest levels of academia and everything else like that. But it wasn't producing what we thought were logical results, and I think that's a fair thing to say.
Yeah.
Sorry, lost my train of thought. So yes, it's been absolutely beneficial in that regard. Now it covers red snapper specifically, right? And so you want to be able to get somewhere. It's one species of fish.
Okay.
And there's plenty of other ones out there that have been under a fair amount of controversy. I mean, think about amberjack season coming up.
Cobia, lemonfish, triggerfish.
I mean, all of them have been under their fair amount of issues and management scrutiny and everything else. And so what we're trying to do is move forward in a way that allows us to be able to cover all those species across the board. Now, the relationship between Tails and Scales and this current ROLP and everything else, really what we're looking at is the pathway to the future when it comes to how Mississippi collects fishery dependent data as a whole. That could mean that if this is successful, when it comes down, because we're doing the effort portion right now, when we go to full implementation, which we're trying to really get forward and move forward next year with full implementation, if it proves to be comparable, successful, and good, it could mean that Tails and Scales doesn't exist in the future.
Correct.
Right?
It takes its place.
You take the burden away from all the fishermen having to report every single trip, and if this one does the job, you move to that as your base completely. And then you've got regional consistency across the board with each one of the states that are conducting the same kind of survey.
With every species,
and
not just red snapper.
It puts everybody on, basically, it gets us, Louisiana, and Alabama, should they move forward with it, all in the same units. Everything is being collected the same way. It gets us a better understanding as a whole, mm-hmm. and allows us as a region to manage better, and also allow us as a state to have better estimates to be able to make our decisions that we need to on inshore species and the things we specifically manage.
We've talked to a few old salts on the show multiple times here, and they talked to us about what it was like when the charter boat industry was just getting off the ground here on the Mississippi Gulf Coast specifically, and how things were fished back then before there were ever even any kind
limits,
of limits
anything.
Whatsoever, but also the technology, including outboard motors to GPS to when that wasn't even
bank
a thing.
Loans.
Bank loan.
That's a big one.
Also, which is a good point because we were at the boat show and holy hell. Anyway,
everybody's got a boat.
Everything has changed, right? And everything has put more heat,
stress
on all types of fish, really, but mm-hmm. especially the ones that taste really good and are super fun to catch, right? So I say all that in saying that all of these efforts, while wouldn't it be more fun or whatever you want to call it to just go out there and just have your way and take all you want, maybe. But don't we want to protect, and this is what we're doing here, right? That's the big umbrella here, is to try to protect these fisheries for future generations to come, because where we're at now, we could decimate populations if we just
let
her rip, right?
Yeah.
Well, look at the cobia and Destin, like we brought up earlier in Florida. Big cobia run used to run all the way through the panhandle, and now
there's
no fish.
And fish are, they're smart enough to figure it out, and they will move to different places.
Yeah, there's migration patterns and stuff like that that come in and change.
We can, there's countless, species, like buffalo, where there was a lot of buffalo around at one point. Then we started shooting them from trains, a lot of them, and then there are not so many anymore.
You got me on part of my favorite subject, but
I'll go
yeah. through. I'll run through basically a response to your question, try to get basically the entirety of
the whole
it,
gamut.
And
yeah.
it, right?
And we got, hey.
So think about settlement, 1800s, everything else like that, the history of conservation in the United States as a whole. The first thing we did was exploit everything to the fullest degree that we could, because one, foundation of an economy, two, feeding people, three, shelter and everything else. Some of the statistics during that time, right, I think I have one back when I was in school, essentially the deforestation of, basically 90% of the United States led to a loss of 13 centimeters of topsoil across the entire state of Georgia, which is an outstanding amount of
fertile ground to plant crops.
And that carried through, right? And there's been this fundamental principle throughout time when it comes to not only, us as a nation, but also the world. Anytime we encounter a new resource, we deem it as unlimited.
Correct.
That's always been the thought, right? The wildlife, everything associated with it. So you mentioned a good one in buffalo, right? That's an excellent one to talk about. Passenger pigeon is one of my favorite ones, right? Passenger pigeon, once the most numerous bird in North America, flocks for miles. It would take days for a single flock to go by.
Okay.
Hunted those to extinction. There is not
is that
a
the same pigeon I'm thinking of, like that we see like in big cities, or is this different? Okay.
No, it's gone.
It's gone. There is no
gone.
More
there
of them in the world.
They don't exist.
Yeah, we harvested the small
ones. I bet
they
tasted good.
They did.
Yeah, that's
they were
the
harvesting
problem.
The ones
don't
out of the
taste
nest.
Good.
Sent them out. They were a delicacy.
They're
basically
gone.
They're gone.
Dodo birds.
Yeah.
So that led to an era of conservation and changes, starting with Teddy Roosevelt, the establishing National Wildlife Refuges, Migratory Bird, Lacey Act, all those kind of stuff to kind of course correct and go in the different direction. Now, the marine side of things, we met it with the same attitude to a degree, right? We saw it. No one can ever overfish the ocean. It's vast and endless and everything else. And so we kind of went after it in the same direction. this culminated into, you know, some management practices that went through that established maximum sustainable yield, essentially MSY, that basically said we could harvest half a population roughly, and that would get us through, and they'd keep rebounding back and forth. But what we realized is that when you apply MSY to species that might have some stochasticity, right, or up and downs in their population,
right,
if you harvest them at 50% when their population's down, all of a sudden that million number you were harvesting needs to be 200,000, but yeah, you went ahead and harvested a million, and you tanked the stock.
And that's not talking about disasters, oil spills, correct, any of that.
That's
stuff,
just
increase of a certain predator. Yeah, exactly.
And so the passage of Magnuson-Stevens, when it first originated, was really to establish exclusive zone and benefit our local fleet rather than foreign fleets. This kind of culminated into the 90s with the crash of the Atlantic cod stock that plummeted, I think, like 95 or 96% of its original biomass, just tanked right down. And they just kept fishing that fishery down to a smaller and smaller area. And because of hyperinflation of CPUE, they basically thought everything was fine until it wasn't.
Yeah.
So that kind of hit the alarm bells, right? All of a sudden we know, hey, we can overfish a stock. Things can happen. We can collapse stocks purely off of fishing. And really that's kind of shown out through the last couple of decades, not to the same degree, right? Because at the end of the day, you've got this change in overall effort between commercial and recreational fleets, especially in the Gulf of Mexico, because that's our unique problem that no one else really faces, I'd say, in the U.S. as a whole. Maybe Southeast on the Atlantic side has a fair amount, but we have got a gigantic recreational component in the Gulf of Mexico compared to all the other regions. And so when all that happened with cod and the passage of Magnuson, all of a sudden we wanted to manage to ACLs, basically assign ACLs, annual catch limits, to all these species, right? This number is going to keep us in a good spot. If we harvest this number, everything will be fine. Problem is, you got to know the number, right? I mean,
you got
to
start.
You got to be able to harvest to the number and be able to get to that number every single time. And the uncertainties I talked to you about in the beginning with how we come up with recreational catch and everything else really makes it difficult to harvest to that number and maintain what the goals are. Also, to give you a clear picture of the stock as a whole. So one of the primary examples, at least in the last decade, last probably decade and a half, I'll point to greater amberjack, right? So how many management changes have y'all seen in y'all's time on amberjack?
A lot. Yeah.
Right?
Used to be three, then two, now it's one,
and
all the way down.
And with every single change, we really don't see a shift in the harvest as a whole. It seems like the stock's not responding. It's not recovering. It's not doing better. It's not doing worse. Nothing. It's almost like all the changes that have been made have just kept it on the same line, and we've got low recruitment and other issues and everything else like that. And my opinion, right, I'm speaking for myself in this instance, I think it has a lot to do with just not knowing what the harvest estimates are.
Yeah.
They're being done in the same way across the entire region. They're being produced through MRIP and everything else like that. But the same instances I talked to you about with low sample size issues of red snapper exist with greater amberjack. There's two times in the last 5 years where we had a single survey that ended up being 300,000 pounds of amberjack. You know what the rest of the years are outside of those two?
Probably not that.
Zero.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of uncertainty with it, right?
Right.
And our premise, as it's always been, at least in my group, and how we manage things, is we try not to go too far too fast, right? We don't like the idea of making changes on top of changes on top of changes.
Baby steps.
Which is what's kind of been going on for the last little while. And, yeah, I say all that to say, like, this problem has been ongoing for a couple hundred years,
and we
always reach the same inevitable conclusion. And we know, right, red snapper season can't be 365 days.
Right.
But we also don't think it should be three. And so that number lies somewhere in the middle. And by doing this work and coming up with a better overall harvest estimate for all of those offshore species, it should lead us into a better spot of getting to that more accurate number, getting to the number of days seasons should be open, and allowing recreational anglers to have more opportunity to harvest these species without going in to that negative feedback loop that we've seen with a lot of these other species in the last decade.
Yeah, it's the base. You got to get the right numbers before you start. Got to get the right numbers.
Getting better numbers. Getting better data is the key to everything here, and that makes total sense. I'll jump to the comments here. This was kind of a long one. I'll throw it up on the screen here. I'll read it out. So this was back a few minutes in the conversation. So I think what they were saying is maybe we could talk a little bit more about tails and scales, but also reference the ROL. I think that's supposed to be the ROLFP, not F, enforcement. So he's asking about, or she, because it's blocked, asking about referencing the enforcement of this new permit. And then the comment was made, he says, I personally do not agree with the current enforcement of tails and scales use. He says, my issue is, stuff happens when you already have a million things to consider when running a safe offshore trip. It has happened to me as well as friends that they forget to get a trip logged. The issue I have is when they enforce not having a trip number, they should either take the fish or give a fine, not both. So that's just a comment there about how tails and scales is currently enforced, which I guess could roll us into how will this permit be enforced.
Let's talk about what it is first. We don't even know what it is.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
What is it and who needs it, first of all?
So for all those fishing for snapper, grouper, triggerfish, amberjack, and cobia, it's basically a free permit that you can get on the MDMR website. It's right there on the dashboard.
State waters or federal waters? Or all of
all.
Them? All.
All
of them. So everybody across the board.
The only thing it doesn't count for, and I made this exception that specifically because of our fishery, right? I had it suggested within the regulation. Mangrove snapper within the intercoastal waterway. Don't have to happen, right? Because we've got a fair amount of folks who fish mangrove snapper inside, especially around Pascagoula and everything else.
All that stuff, yes.
So we don't want every single one of those individuals to have an offshore landing permit if they're staying in close. But outside of that, it's those species anytime you're fishing for them.
And give the species again.
It's snappers, groupers, amberjack, cobia, triggerfish.
All right. And this is going to be brought up. So is there there's no boundary on it? Like even within charter boat captains, if I'm a charter boat captain, I have to, if I'm running a trip, now I have to do the tails and scales and have this landing permit. Is that correct?
The landing permit is just one time, just having the permit on board. And the tails and scales will run concurrently this year and likely through next year when we pilot out MS Krill completely. And like I said, our thought process there is to try to get all the estimates together, take a look, see how each one is performing. And if this does what we hope it does, which is provide us good base level estimates of recreational harvest for multiple species throughout the entire year, then there's a good chance that tails and scales requirement is going to be gone.
Okay.
And that burden will be relieved.
All right, let me ask you. I got a couple. First question is, you said mangrove in the intercoastal waterway, you don't need the permit.
Inside the intercoastal waterway.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Okay, but what about mangrove offshore, not there?
Yes.
Okay, so when you say snapper, how many species of snapper are we talking about?
A bunch.
All of them?
A bunch of them.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically, it's red snapper, gray snapper, vermilion snapper, the species that are typical to our fishery across the
Okay. Yeah, right. So, yeah. Okay. Second question was, I've already got the card at my house. I meant to bring it so I can flash it. But you got yours on you?
Yeah,
I meant to throw it in my wallet. I forgot. I have the card. I've registered. Well, I don't even remember the cost. What was
it's
the
free.
Cost?
$0.
$0.
That wasn't a joke. I actually did forget. That's why, because I didn't have to pay for it. I've registered. You want to flash it to the camera, Jerry? Hold on.
Twitch it.
Yep. You got to block his face. Right there. Cool little
hold
card.
Hold on.
Yep. It's going to take a second. Cool little card. There it is right there.
There's the front.
He's got his permit number on there. So
yeah, that's my social security number.
Try to go get a bank loan.
Yeah, that's the back.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, okay, we got a card. We got a thing, another permit. He's going to have to carry that. We're all going to have to carry that if we go out fishing for those species. What else do we have to do? Just having that card is going to be enough?
That's it. So
and tails and scales. You still, for right now, follow those rules and regulations too.
This one specifically gets you within, because you're already within the license frame as a whole, because most likely you've got a Mississippi saltwater recreational fishing license.
You would have to.
Right.
Yeah, you have to have both.
So
yeah,
you've got that one, and now you've got the RLP. Okay. And what it does is be able to, once again, isolate that group. So when we do the call-outs, right, which I don't know if either of you have received one or not, from a 985 number, trying to get all that changed so it's a little bit more specific to our area.
Yeah, damn.
But they call out And that's how we're getting our effort right now. You signing up for that permit essentially gets within the licensed data frame that you are already in and help designate you as an ROLP user. And so when the effort calls are made, they're made to you as an ROLP holder. And then your effort is constrained to the ROLP universe, not
80,000
licensed anglers.
Yeah. Okay. So the guy who fishes off his pier and never goes offshore doesn't need this.
That's right.
And okay. All right. So let me process this out loud. So like you're saying, what you've done with this right here is you've brought 80,000 down to however many people end up signing up for that, right? But how are you still understanding how many amberjack, cobia, whatever that we're actually catching?
What's the report?
How do we report the fish? Is that through the call?
That'll be dockside. So that'll be us at the docks getting the catch and observing the catch as we've done for the last 10 years. It'll just be through a different survey. It'll be a much more simplified survey as a whole. It's not going to be front page, front and back, two pages, 15 questions. Be a little bit simpler, a little bit more straightforward, but that information will be gathered dockside.
So we don't have to report anything with this?
Just trips.
The only thing we have to do, how do we report the trip?
So they're going to call you, and they'll send an email should you have your email associated with your account. If not, they'll ask for your email at the end of the first survey. But essentially, they'll just ask, did you fish at all in the last week, Sunday to Saturday? And you basically say, yeah, I fished on Tuesday, and I fished on Thursday. If you're like me, no, I didn't fish at all because I had no time. But let's say you did. Tell them you fished on Tuesday and Thursday, and they'll ask you the general questions about, all right, where did you fish? Was it offshore, at the islands, inshore? Basically those kind of aspects, general aspects about the trip. And that's the only thing associated with that permit.
So Angie just asked, how often will this permit be collecting data, per trip or per permit purchase? So I think you just answered that, right?
Yeah, it'll be.
When do the phone calls run? Do they do every month?
It's every week, just like Louisiana, but it's randomly selected folks within the universe.
Okay.
So it's not like every single permit holder is getting a call every single week.
Right. So say 10,000, you're getting divided.
We're shuffling it down to a small proportion of them to try to get a realistic representation of the overall fishing population.
Evan says they already call him weekly.
Now, that has to be changed.
The 985 number?
Yes. If I get a I don't know if you can do it, but when it comes up in the phone, to be like DMR, if you could do that automatically, because if a 985 call number calls me, I'm doing click, you know what I'm saying, and doing that.
No, I think Alabama just was able to change theirs in the last little while, which I was made aware of. And so we're actually contacting them to try to get all that changed over. And I don't know what they'll be able to say, at least on the caller ID portion of it.
Right.
But hopefully we can get that switched to something a little bit more commonplace, because I'm the same way. Yeah. If I get a call and I don't recognize it.
Click. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to Evan's point, I've been called a fair amount for this one.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe I have and don't know it.
I get them all the time, but
I'm wondering, and I don't know if I'm going to make our audience mad and every fisherman mad, but why not, if we did Tails and Scales, why not just update that app for everything that included in these reef fish? And then also, when you come back in, why not just enter your catch in right there? And that seems to me like way more accurate than phone calls and surveys. Is that, why not do that?
So really what that comes down to is the logistics of implementing that and validating it through the already dockside surveys that we have going on for Tails and Scales specifically.
So you'd still have to do dockside because people could just fudge them.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do that right now with Tails and Scales. They don't report. They think if you report, then you're going to lose snapper, or if you don't report, you know what I'm saying? Like, I went on a trip, but I didn't catch anything, so the number stays up.
You've also got the enhanced burden on all the various anglers, right? Because right now it's constrained to a species during its season. If you open it up to all the other species, possible.
I meant keeping it at the species that you got here.
Yeah.
Just the ones we're worried about, I guess you'd say.
Even that would potentially go year-round with some of the other species included, because there's some that don't have current season restrictions on them.
Okay.
So with this coming out this year, are we going to see more presence with the dockside surveys? I mean, we're going to see more people out there, I'm sure.
You'll see the same amount through this year, right? Because we're piloting the effort this year. And next year, you'll see more folks
Okay.
dockside.
I think another question is this ever going to cost money? Because that's what the thing – a lot of people say it's another money grab, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Is this ever going to turn into a something that we have to buy?
Well, I can't speak for that specifically, but the entire goal in my mind is to never have a charge associated with that one at
right.
all. We're doing this as much as folks might disagree with it and, you know, think I'm full of it, right? We're doing this as trying to provide the most benefit to our anglers. And we've kind of been treated pretty harshly, I think, in the last little while when it comes to a lot of these federally managed species and everything else.
Oh, yeah. Snappers so, getting – we're getting – and, I mean, it goes state, federal, and all that stuff. A lot of people are just getting away from the federal, like Texas and all them, and just going to straight state waters. I don't know if we're ever going to do that, but
– yeah, that's another conversation yeah, about me. But
You're right.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I think we've been treated fairly harshly, and we've done our due diligence, I think, especially in the last 7 or 8 years to really provide what we think is a logical argument to this whole thing. And at the end of the day, we're trying to do what's best for our anglers
right.
first. And then if it helps out the region as a whole, well, that's even better as well. But our first priority is to
help us
to our anglers first.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Angie asked another comment. I'll put it up on the screen. I think we've covered this, but maybe we can be more clear. She's saying, how will the seasons be determined if they do away with tails and scales as far as filling the pound quota to determine season length? I think we've touched that, but maybe we could just re-clarify.
So, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about other species and everything else, you're talking about assessments and everything else. So, to a degree, that also rests with Red Snapper. Now, we'll still have... we'll have to go through additional calibrations and comparisons and everything else to come up with what would be Mississippi's allotted ACL. But at some point, all this stuff is going to be put back into an assessment to derive an overall OFL and ABC for the entire fishery for Red Snapper, and then allocated to commercial, recreational, and split recreational charter, and have the basically the ACLs for all those groups, and then it'll be parted out, which will be a whole new number for us all to have. And hopefully that number is going to be derived directly from what we're talking about now, which is LA Krill, MS Krill, and everything else with the regional consistency across the board. And as far as the season determination goes, that's honestly a hard one to say, right? In the beginning, we tried to project as accurately as we could and give everyone, we're doing this to this, and we're doing this to this, and it's going to be great. And then when you get close to the end of the season, I'm sure you all have experienced it, right? Things don't look good. We're going to have to close early. But then we close early, and a hurricane hits. And
nobody fishes.
All of a sudden, you've got pounds on the table. And so then you reopen another weekend and keep going. And that's the same with all the fisheries managers across the different states. Everyone's kind of ran into the same problem as far as projecting out Red Snapper catch to the point where you can have a defined season. Because I know, you know, everyone wants it. Everyone wants to know, hey, I've got a trip lined up. I've got a buddy coming down the end of August. Is it going to be open? It's just a difficult thing to be able to say because you don't know how that effort's going to switch all the time. And this is the main point for that one. EFP year, 17, 39-day extension off the three-day season. We move that into EFPs in 2018 and 2019. So around 70 days, 76 days. 2020 hits. Pandemic. Folks aren't at work.
No.
We fishing.
They got those stimmy checks in their pockets.
Yeah, we fishing, baby. We fishing.
The season lasts for 45 days.
Yeah.
It was half its length.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was expecting folks to just come knocking down the door and call me and just go up and down, but most folks recognized it.
They were out there.
Yeah. Right.
That data came from the Tells of Skills.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Yeah, and so then, you know, the following seasons after that, you had another around 70, and then it started increasing more and more to the point where, you know, we are where we are now. So I say all that to say that effort, when it comes down to it, is tough to determine. It's based off of the economy, gas prices, everything else. It's based off of weather. And it's based off a whole load of factors that you cannot predict on the front end as much as you want to try, because trust me, we have tried.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that before too. Like you said, I mean, every 3 weekends in a row where you got bad weather, it's like, well, then a bunch of people didn't fish. You know, some people do run trips during the or recreational whatever during the week, but that puts the brakes on for a lot of people. People fish Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, Chris asked if he missed something, how do you report a trip? Currently, right now, it's still running Tails and Scales. Report the trip through there, but you just need to have that landing permit registered for and have. Do you have to have the card on you if they ask for it?
You're gonna be emailed the card.
Yeah,
and then if you elected to have the physical card, we'll send you that as well. Those right now are being printed in a printer right across from my desk, and it's actually us packing those envelopes and sending them out.
Okay,
so
but that printer's
coming.
Smoking.
Oh yeah, it's working overtime.
So does this covers me as a charter captain? Does it cover my crew as well? I'm sure it does. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Does but again though, if you were to get dockside checked, do I need to present that card electronically or physically?
For this year, no tickets will be written associated with that card.
Okay.
At all. Me and the enforcement guys and our groups kind of sat down together, talked about the overall scope for the program, where we're trying to go. Mm-hmm. And once again, this isn't trying to be a penalty to anybody.
Correct.
That's why it's free. That's why we're trying to move forward in this direction.
But at some point you have to enforce or nobody will use it.
Correct.
Right.
Right. And for this year, it's going to be try to be as educational as possible with it. Basically let them know what it's for. If you got any questions, call us, right? Mm-hmm. The Tails and Scales hotline that's on the back of this card goes to a round robin of four employees that are within the Fin Fish Bureau, one of them being me. And so I've answered calls in 18 and 19 and even through years, and I've got my staff that have also picked up the phone at 4 a.m. to get people out on the water, get them out, get a trip done if something went wrong or they were out of service or something else happened.
Yeah.
We're the ones answering those phone calls.
Okay.
And so when folks have questions, they call there and it comes to us and we do our best to fill them.
Is there anything that we haven't covered that you've heard on your end answering those phone calls when it comes to either this, Tails and Scales, or anything moving forward? Complaints or any topic that we haven't talked about?
No.
What about the commercial side? Are they doing the same as us?
No, not on reef fish side, because most of the commercial fisheries at this point are under IFQs and have VMS and trip tickets associated with them and quota allocations that have to be electronically filled out and predetermined. So they're on hell in, hell out with VMS and the other reporting requirements.
So to break that down, they're already stricter on the way they report.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are real time, IFQ driven, quotas allocated out. All that stuff.
Their GPS.
They gotta let them know before they're coming in, when they're landing, approximately what they've got. I mean,
which would be too much of a financial burden on a recreational guy to implement those type of.
Yeah,
it's procedures. The same thing we talked about earlier, right? Why can't we just do this for multiple species? I mean, the number one is just the burden of it all. Every single trip, all these species being accounted for.
Actually what I meant. I didn't mean multiple species. What I meant was the species that we're talking about. Why not just when you come in on the Tails and Scales, call it whatever you want, app, just, hey, I caught one of these, two of these, three of that's one of the, you know, and none of those, and electronically report it, and then use the dockside as a validation tool. You know, we've sampled X number of. We had 50,000 people, or I don't know.
Yeah, we were able to validate.
We had 5,000, correct. Yeah. And when 2% of those we checked at the dockside and it matched.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Cost, probably, logistics.
Cost, validations, and then the overall design of the program is trying to be as close to maybe to Louisiana as possible.
And I'm sure that would be another thing, you know, to have to do that every time you came in, have to have a cell phone, have to have service, have to have all that stuff.
Well, for this lasting a year, so you get it. The temporary one for 2 weeks.
Yep.
I think that muddied up the water too, because when you got it online, it said expires in 2 weeks, and everybody was like, "What the heck? I got to do this every 2 weeks?"
Yeah, and that was out of the best of intentions, to be honest with you. We didn't want it to cause that kind of confusion. Essentially, what we wanted to do is have folks submit it, match them in the license database, and then be able to move forward from there. Right. Mm-hmm. That's because we're trying to make sure that the database we're providing for the effort calls and everything else is as accurate as possible, and everybody's in the group they're supposed to be associated with and everything. So that 2 week one was essentially like a checkbox for us to be able to go, all right, this person submitted, got the license number, license database, check, move forward. Sending the card out with an expiration date, lessons learned, right?
Right. I mean, you got
right. Everybody makes mistakes.
I mean, like, as soon as I posted, everybody was like, it expires in 2 weeks. And they were like, you got to fill it out every 2 weeks. And I was like, I don't know. And then I started looking it up, and then it was, you get a temporary one for 2 weeks, and then you get your.
Yeah,
for the rest of the year.
As somebody, or we do fishing tournaments, we sell merchandise. Like, you have to be clear and concise, 100%. And you don't realize, you like, well, I know what I meant, and it's like the person looking over here, like, they didn't get that.
Oh, had no idea.
Like, damn. Okay, I get it. But yeah, so I don't know. I think that's all the questions we had so far in the live comments. But I don't think it's that bad, man. If you can't go online, get a free card. Sign up for that. To try to do two things. Number one, protect these fisheries around here on the fish that we target the most. And number two, get more accurate data that so that we can get either more allocated catch limit or fish to catch or less, right? Is the big takeaway topic from this.
Yeah, I'd say to get a more accurate representation of the removals of the entire fishery and to also have the appropriate amount of allocation provided to us so we can provide our anglers with that opportunity to go out and harvest. Because like we said, 3 is not a realistic number for the number of days of red snapper season.
Right.
But neither is 365. The number's in the middle.
Yeah.
And I think what we've done for the last little while, at least, you know, 18, 19 and through that time, the 75 days, stuff like that, I think that's been a great thing for our state and for the anglers. And I'm sure some folks, you know, wish they had more. Some folks might think it's too much, but I think at the end of the day, that was a pretty good spot to be in, providing that kind of access. And we're seeing all the other fisheries kind of dwindle down to the side, specifically amberjack, right?
Yeah.
Gag over in Florida. But, you know, we kind of want to get ahead of all that kind of stuff and stop making these. We don't want punitive management changes that pile on one after another, year after year, that restrict the fishery down to nothing.
Right.
Because it is harder, it is 10 times harder to alleviate a regulation than it is to make one at the end of the day, especially on the federal side.
Yeah, so once it's in writing, it's tough to break.
That's right, because you got to have a multitude of evidence and data and everything else to be able to justify, all right, I'm going to increase this bag limit or I'm going to drop the size limit back down or anything else like that. That's just something you don't see. All right, when's the last time you looked at a regulation listener's like, oh, we're getting more of this.
Yeah.
Never. But about 10 years ago.
Yeah. When y'all start to come up with these types of things, y'all obviously kick it around in y'all's department with science and internally in your office. If an angler, recreational guy wants to get more involved and be part of the process, wants to hear about things that are coming down the pipe before they happen, how can they go about doing that?
So we've always got the information on the website, stuff like that. We are part of numerous committees on the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission, things like the Gulf Council. These topics are discussed at the SSC every now and then. But in all honesty, the easiest thing to do is call.
Okay.
I mean, if you're truly invested in it and want to know more, I can't tell you how many folks have called me and some of my colleagues just to ask questions and get a better sense. And some call and they're absolutely upset about it. Mm-hmm. And by the end of it, they have a better understanding. And some call and just have a genuine interest and just want to know more. And I'm happy to oblige.
I think that's where a lot of people fall, is that 80% where, do I need this? What does it do for me? And why are we doing it? And that's kind of what we covered tonight.
Right.
Should be.
Yeah. I like it.
So to recap, everybody who fishes Mississippi waters or federal waters needs one of these. Correct.
For those species listed. So those species, snappers, groupers, amberjacks, triggerfish, and cobia, except for mangroves inside the intercoastal.
Yeah.
You don't want the guy fishing the rocks over there at Ingalls or fishing
Matthew
the piers
Mitchell.
Catching.
Yeah. Right.
Catching those stud mangroves. They don't need to have one.
And then if you're a charter boat captain, this takes care of your whole fleet.
Same as your charter license.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think, like I said, I think that wrapped up the questions in the comment section. So, Trevor, we appreciate you stopping by and talking to us. We hope that you understand, you know, the information is clear, but just by hearing it being discussed. We also hope that people realize that the Department of Marine Resources is out here. Yeah, they have to enforce laws, but they're out here to protect the fisheries that we all love so much, and we want to keep them around.
Oh,
we want to keep them.
One more.
Yeah.
Dive. has to have the same thing, right? Yeah. Dive, even across the board, has to have the same thing.
Yeah, it's harvesting. So,
right.
Yeah.
All right.
Good point. Yeah. Harvesting. That's right. Not catching, harvesting. I like that. So thanks, everybody that watched on the live, the replay, everybody out in the podcast land for checking us out. It was a pleasure doing this one. We've got a couple more DMRs coming up, Joey. Next month?
We got snapper season. Well, actually, we got Bonnie Carey first. Then we got snapper opening up. And one more.
Shrimp season.
Yeah, there it is.
Hey, guys. My man knows what he's talking about over there.
And let me flash this.
All right, go ahead. Flash it.
Because that's – Trevor, where can we find you most active?
There you go.
There you go. So if we want to get any kind of details or anything like that, what's the number to call you at?
You can call that Tails and Scales hotline, or my number is on the website as well.
There it is.
It's out there, and we'll drop the links to everything in the comments.
The link to get this is on your website as well.
It's on the website as well, along with a lot of FAQs and general information about it as a whole.
It is right at the bottom. I was looking at that earlier today. So, all right, thanks again, man. You have a great evening. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for everybody. We got some cool stuff coming up, so y'all keep tuning in. If you haven't downloaded the Brown Water Banter app, go do it. Coastal Marine Sales and Services is a sponsor. We appreciate them. Go check them out. But download it. We got all kind of links, man. Tails and Scales is right inside of our app.
Yeah, we got Tails and Scales app.
We can put a tile to go link straight to this
100%
as well. I think we already did. We can. It doesn't matter. Anyway, go download it now. It's free. We'll see y'all on the next one.
Later.
Thanks so much for checking out the show. We really appreciate the support. If you haven't downloaded the Brown Water Banter app yet, go do it. It's free in the App Store and on Google Play. We have everything covered for a day out on the water. We've got the tides, the radar, Tails and Scales app. We've got a radio station right inside of it, and it's all free. All of our content is in there. You can listen to the show directly inside of the app. Make sure you keep your notifications turned on so you can stay in touch with us as we go live with guests in the future and plan events. If y'all keep tuning in, we'll keep doing them. We'll see you on the next one. Brown Water Banter.